Hey, good morning, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. Today is Sunday, February 1st, 2026. My name is Leah M., and I'm your moderator for this morning. The share IDs for Friday, January 30th are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 23,170, that's 23170. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 23,171. That's 23171. This morning, A Vision for You presents Power, Presence, and Purpose. The Big Book was written as a set of directions for doing the steps quickly and effectively. It's not a book of theory or philosophy. It offers a clear step-by-step approach for your recovery. The 12 steps are introduced in Chapter 5 of the Big Book with the words, "Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path." The power, the presence, and the purpose as the result of a spiritual awakening are based on these 12 simple steps. Overeaters Anonymous stands for the proposition that the 12 steps gives us freedom from the bondage of food. The 12 steps, as outlined in the Big Book, represent a process of spiritual awakening, a personality change sufficient to overcome compulsive overeating. We submit to a simple process that is not easy, yet takes us to a place we've never been. In practicing the 12 steps, our lives move from pain and despair to meaningful living, guided by spiritual strength, conscious awareness, and a clear sense that God has taken our pain and our suffering and turn them into healing for others. We are now truly given power, presence, and purpose. Joining us today to elaborate on this topic is Jennifer C., a recovered compulsive overeater from South Carolina. Jennifer is dedicated to the 12-step way of life and to carrying the message of recovery. And it's with great appreciation that I welcome Jennifer C. to the line. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning, Leah. Thank you so much for that intro. You said it all. Thank you for this opportunity. And I'm going to start with prayer. Father God, thank you. Thank you for this day. Thank you for this time. Thank you for every single person that's on this line this morning. Thank you that if they're here, you brought them here. Speak your words, have your way. We need your spirit, we need your power. I thank you. Amen. Power, presence, and purpose. These are three words that encapsulate this process for me, both through the book and in my own personal experience with this recovery process. And I'm so humbled by this opportunity, and it's always a real reflection point for me to look back at where I come from, who I used to be, what I used to do, how I used to think. And to really see that this miraculous process is ongoing. It's not a one and done. And I'm so grateful for that. So I'm a big believer that one of my primary responsibilities as a woman in recovery is to continuously seek a new experience with steps 1, 2, and 3. While I also get to live every day in the awakening that I've already gotten, that I already have. I believe that this disease of compulsive overeating is not limited to food, obviously, right? I believe that addiction in general is the disease of more. The disease of what I have is not enough. And I also believe that as an ex-problem eater, drinker, addict, I become safe from the disease of addiction when my tenacity for more gets funneled through the steps, 1, 2, and 3 specifically. More power, more of God's presence in my life, more of my own ability to be present in reality, and more of God's purpose for my recovery and for my life in general. More freedom, more truth. And to me, those words are interchangeable because the truth is what sets me free, right? More truth, more freedom. So as I experience a deeper relationship with these steps, I'm then in more of a position of purpose to effectively help people that God brings to me in their experience with the foundation of their own process. Because truth is so powerful that it sets us all free at the same time. I speak it. It sets me free. It sets you free if you believe it. So this book is teaching me that the only thing that limits me from more freedom is my own level of consciousness. That's the difference for all of us. So the first word is power. And when I look at this word power in light of steps 1, 2, and 3, here's been my experience. I learn in this program that my medication for this spiritual malady is power. You know, the reality for me is that I didn't know what I didn't know, and I couldn't get this thing. I could not get this thing. I left program, I came back, I left, I came back. I think one of the most hopeless places you can be in is when you really don't think this is going to work for you. Because they tell you this is your last stop. You know, they tell you that this is it. Sink or swim. If you're the real deal, this is the only thing that's going to save you, and then you're drowning in it. Carl Jung, Dr. Carl Jung, was one of the most respected psychiatrists in the world. And Jung treated Roland Hazard, who was an American alcoholic, had all kinds of money, but no sobriety. He was an alcoholic in the worst way. He went to see Dr. Jung, who treated him for an entire year. And eventually he said to him, like, dude, you're not going to make it. I got nothing else for you. Medicine and psychiatry, like, they can't fix you. I gave you everything I have. You ever feel that way as a sponsor? Dude, I gave you everything I have. I got nothing left. This is the end of the road for you unless, this is what Carl Jung said to him. He said, your only real hope is that you have a vital spiritual experience. And he told Roland, he said, some alcoholics have a craving that is so deep that it functions like a spiritual hunger. Alcohol, food, addiction in general is a distorted substitute for God. That's what he told him. And he said, only a transforming spiritual encounter can reorder that craving. That's me. Jung later wrote a letter to Bill Wilson. And in that letter, he uses the phrase spiritus contra spiritum, which literally means only a spirit, capital S, can conquer other spirits, lowercase s. It takes a spirit to conquer spirits. Only a higher spirit can overcome the spirit of addiction. So that's my reality. That's my reality. I am stuck. I am stuck under the control of a spirit, of a power that is greater than me, and it is the power of addiction. And I call it the disease of suddenlies. And when you break that down, it's sudden lies. Page 36. We know that story, right? Suddenly, the thought crosses my mind to just go ahead and put a little whiskey in my milk. That won't hurt me. Suddenly. Can't tell the truth from the false. Suddenly, the thought crossed my mind that one more day isn't that big of a deal. Meanwhile, one more day is another week, is another month, is another year. I've been in relapse now for how many years? Can't get out. Suddenly, the thought crosses my mind that I can't trust God, that I got to take matters into my own hands. Suddenly, the thought crosses my mind that a small compromise isn't such a big deal, when in reality, any exception when it comes to food is like an alcoholic taking a little swig of alcohol. So I have the disease of sudden lies, and it's a power greater than me. I have no effective mental defense against this mental twist that I'm vulnerable to. What do I do with that? You know, the other part of step one, as I continue on this process, is the unmanageability. And I used to understand the unmanageability as I eat, I make a mess in my life. If I stop eating like this, my life will get better. Well, that's true. If I stop compulsively overeating, there are aspects of my life that will inherently improve. But the unmanageability, as I understand, the more I read this book and I study it, I see that the unmanageability that Bill is actually teaching us is the selfishness and the self-centeredness. It's the self-will. It's the bondage of self. And then Bill tells me two things. He says, so by the way, you have no power over this power greater than you, which is the power of addiction, which is this mental obsession that hijacks you. And also, you have this other problem. You are extremely self-centered. You have a very strong self-will that opposes the will of God. And by the way, you can't fix that either. Which automatically moves me into step two. And here's the thing. If I don't really truly believe that food is a power greater than me, I think about the promises of this program. They're so beautiful. This process promises me a new freedom and a new happiness. It tells me I'm not going to regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it, which I never understood how that was possible. It tells me I'm going to comprehend the word serenity and I'm going to know peace, real peace. And it has all these other promises, right? Well, if I take a look at those promises and I replace the steps and God with the addiction, I read them like this. Whenever I took a drink, whenever I started eating compulsively, I felt a new freedom and a new happiness. Boy, that was true, right? Soon as I gave up on my abstinence, forget this, I'm all done. If this is what it feels like, then I'm going to go eat. And I'd walk in the grocery store and I would immediately feel ease and comfort that would come at once. I didn't even have to take the bite. Just knowing that the bite was going to come, that I was all done biting this. Ease, comfort, freedom, happiness. I would get into a really good mood. All of a sudden, I would forget about the past, all the regret, all the shame, and for a minute, I would get that relief. Just focus on the next thing to eat. I'm going to eat next. And then, you know, the crazy thing about being in the phenomenon of craving is that the only thing that alleviates the guilt and shame is more food, right? So step two, I need power. I need power greater than the power of addiction. I need power greater than my own unsteady willpower. I need power that's going to save me, not just from killing myself with food, not just from chasing dopamine, but from this unmanageability of self-centeredness in my life. So that becomes for me what this book is teaching me, is that that becomes the presence of God. And if I could describe the way that my personal program has evolved over the last 5 years, I would say that my program, my personal program, has become so much more about a person than a program. I encourage everybody to nail down some bullseye paragraphs for yourself. You know, a bullseye paragraph is a paragraph that I consider one of my own personal bullseyes. Because I need to constantly get realigned, right? What am I realigning myself to? So on page 13, Bill humbly offers himself to God. This is his spiritual experience. This is the game changer. There I humbly offered myself to God as I then understood him, to do with me as he would. I placed myself unreservedly under his care and his direction. Here's the bullseye. I admitted for the first time that of myself, I was nothing. That without him, I was lost. That's my bullseye. And you know, it's easy to feel that way when you're in the grips of addiction and it's destroying you and your life is falling apart. What about when life is going really well and things are being put back together? That's still got to be my bullseye. And I think as sponsors, you know, sometimes we give the assignment, okay, I want you to look at Bill's story. I want you to identify, do you think like Bill thought? Do you drink? Do you eat like Bill drank in our case, right? How do you identify with Bill? But the part that we forget is that we can also ask our sponsees, do you want what Bill had? Do you want what Bill was given? Yes, I think like Bill thought. It was all about me. It was all about proving to myself, proving to you that I was enough, that I was enough, that I was important. I thought the way he thought, right? Like I kept thinking I could get a hang on this thing. I kept thinking I could tackle it and I kept thinking I could figure it out. I kept thinking I was too smart for this program. I kept thinking I didn't want to be in this program. I kept thinking that there had to be another way. I kept thinking that fear was going to keep me sober. I kept thinking all those things. And then the next paragraph, she eats again. She eats again. She thought she figured it out. She ate again. I did all of that. I was destroying my life in different ways, not just with food, but with self-will. with me thinking that my thoughts were the truth. When this book is teaching me, I get delusional. At certain times, I get delusional. Does that stop once the alcohol, food, drugs gets put down? No. That's the unmanageability. There's still times I can't tell the true from the false, which is why I have to be vigilant, which is why I have to work this program every single day. But the other piece where I want to identify with Bill is I want to really believe that of myself, I'm nothing, and that without God, I'm completely lost. It goes on to say that he ruthlessly faced his sins and became willing to have his newfound friend, capital F, take them away, root and branch. I think about those words, root and branch. Root is how they got there. Branch is how they manifest. I have a friend that can do both, root and branch. How did I get to be so self-centered? How did I get to be so fearful? God knows. And he knows how to unravel it all. So that's why I'm safe with steps 1, 2, and 3. And that's why my tenacity for more is such an asset. When I keep asking God for a new experience, a fresh fire with steps 1, 2, and 3. And my program becomes more and more and more about God's presence. Another bullseye paragraph for me, bullseye sentence in particular. I think if it were to be rewritten, it would say that when thousands instead of hundreds, right? Thank you, God. That when thousands can honestly say that their consciousness of God's presence is the most important fact of their lives, it gives us a reason to have faith. You know, it's funny because it's the same sentences, it's the same paragraphs, it's the same chapters that we read, it's the same steps. And yet, the more we do this thing, and we really, really do this thing, we get to have a deeper experience with all of it. And I used to read that sentence, and I used to think I got it, and then I'd read it again, and I'd be like, okay. So it's not just God's presence. It's my consciousness of God's presence. Okay, I think I got that. Okay. So it's a matter of consciousness. How awake am I to the most important reality of my life today, which is that God is here. The all-powerful God is in every single detail of my life. That's the most important fact. That's my bullseye. Because here's the thing, every single day there's all these other facts. I got a bank account. I got relationships, I got my health, the weather, all kinds of facts. But this book is teaching me play by play what to focus on. Where I used to focus on the next hit, I focus on the next right thing. God, what's the next right thing? What's the next right thought? Where I used to focus on my own problems, my own issues, my own plans, my own designs, where I used to be an imagination station all up in my head all day long, God says, you know what? I'm going to transform you into a person who is now focusing on what you can contribute. You lose interest in those selfish things and you gain interest in how you can serve and how you can help, how you can build. The change in focus So my focus becomes this most important fact, is that regardless of all these other facts, the one fact that doesn't change is God's presence. I'm so grateful for that. Because in my process, my life unraveled. I was saying the third step prayer, I'm like, okay, God, let's build. You're going to build with me, right? And then things were falling apart. I was like, wait, what happened to the building part? I thought this was supposed to get better and better. Like, what's going on here? And little by little, my third step prayer became, God, you know what? Do with me whatever you want to do. Here I am. I got nothing. Do with me whatever you want to do, period. I'd love for you to build with me. But I don't know what I don't know, and I choose trust. I know what it's like not to have my health. I know what it's like to watch my relationships fall apart. I know what it's like to be completely disillusioned by my own faith. And the good news is that through all of that, God's presence was, is, and will be the most important fact, because I've seen it all get put back together. I've watched God rebuild all the things that were falling apart. And I'm so grateful for that. But I think the most important thing that I'm grateful for is that whether it's coming or going, up or down, it's still not the most important fact. Thank you, God. Because my program becomes so much more about a person. And that's been my reality. It has to be. Because another bullseye sentence is that faith has to operate 24/7 or Jennifer goes down. Well, I don't really go down, right? Like, I ain't eating. I'm free. I'm abstinent. Let me tell you how abstinent I am. I got this many days and this many years, and I'm not perishing. I mean, I may not be filled with faith, but like, I'm not going down. Okay. So how free do I want to be? How conscious do I want to be? That's the question. That's the litmus test. You know, it's interesting to me because the bedevilments are in direct correlation to step two. Clearly, it can't just be about my relationship with addiction. It can't just be about the food. Clearly, it has to be more than that, right? And clearly, I can't blame the food and addiction for all my problems, because how come when I get sober, I still have a lot of these problems? So once again, I study Bill's story. I look at Bill's process. And I see that Bill wrote Emotional Sobriety years after he was physically sober and pouring himself into Alcoholics Anonymous. And he came to a lot of realizations about the addict's tendency to still be on a quest. To still be on a quest, looking in all the wrong places. And going back to the fact that God has all the facts and knows how to unravel it. right? Bill is abandoned. Bill had his reasons. His mother and father left him. If you feel prejudice against the word father in the book, when a sponsee comes to me with that prejudice, I don't say, okay, well, change it. Change it so you feel more comfortable. I say, you know what? Let's look at the prejudice, because Bill had it. Bill's father left him. Completely walked out. Brilliant man. He was on his own quest. And he left his son. And then not long after, his mother left him. So talk about rejection. Talk about prejudice against the word father. Bill needed a new experience. He needed a new experience with the word father, and he needed a new experience with a father's love. And so that's what I help my sponsees do, is look at the pride, look at the prejudice. What's blocking you? Can you be open to a new experience? And the reason why I think this is so important is because when I read this book play by play and I don't change any of the words in it, I see that this paragraph that includes that word is actually a keystone paragraph for God to be my director, for God to be my father, to be his child. This is a keystone paragraph. Okay, why is that so important? Because then I can really begin to see myself as a child, dependent, in need of protection. I need protection. This book is teaching me I have one defense. It's my only defense. I have no other defense against this spiritual malady, this self-will, this twisted thinking. I have no other defense. I need God's protection. So I want to help my sponsees get a strong foundation with the first three steps, because that's what Bill got. Do I think like he thought? Do I eat like he drank? Do I want what he had? Maybe it's going to come to me gradually. It came to him suddenly. But you know what? Just because it came to him suddenly, he was still just as human. He still had waves of misery and depression. And he knew that God's will was his only way out. Over and over and over and over and over again. So step two becomes a promise of restoration. A promise of health. And in my process, step two had to be more than I'm no longer going to hurt myself with food. That's where it begins. If you're in the food, if you can't get out of the food, step two is about God's power to save you. You're drowning in the water. God has the power to pull you out. Period. But over the years, I had to come to believe that God could do all sorts of things for me that I could not do for myself. And I have a list of ways that God has answered so many of my prayers. God, please save me from this demon of addiction. But I have needed to trust him to rebuild my entire life, brick by brick. So part of my purpose, this book is teaching me that part of my purpose purpose is to bear witness. To bear witness to all the people that I'm going to help. What am I bearing witness to? I'm bearing witness to God's power, God's love, and God's way of life. So when I get a new experience with steps 1, 2, and 3, I am able to fulfill that purpose in a more powerful way because I can only give away what I have. Thy power. Thy power to save me. Because I don't stay powerless. Thank you, God. We don't stay powerless. When my will is aligned with God's will, when I offer myself to God, when I continuously ask God to direct me, I have power. God gives me the power to carry out his will. The power to drop it like it's hot. Recoil. Recoil. You know what's so awesome? One of the promises we talk about suddenlies, right? Sudden lies. These sudden lies. That word suddenly, we know it well when it comes to the whiskey and the milk. But I think about I think about XXIX when it describes a man who was a nervous wreck, was hopeless, couldn't get out of the food, kept going back over and over and over again. Didn't know what he didn't know, couldn't get this thing, right? XXIX, on the other hand, the very same person, you, the very same person, suddenly able to control his desire, suddenly able to turn her thoughts towards helping others instead of obsessing about her own life. Suddenly able to trust God where she used to have so much fear and anxiety, suddenly becomes a woman who prays like her life depends on it. Suddenly has the power to do God's will. Suddenly she's close and she's connected. Suddenly she knows where her help comes from, and it sure as hell does not come from the food. They believe in themselves, and still more, they believe in the power that pulls chronic alcoholics from the gates of death. So if anyone tells you that recovered means you're never, ever going to have the desire to eat off your food plan, all I can tell you is that in the book, the desires come sometimes. But we become people who are suddenly able to control the desires by recoiling and turning our attention. Another paragraph in this book that really hits home for me over and over again is when Bill was plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. And fill in the blank, right? Plagued by waves of, there's got to be more. This isn't enough. This sometimes nearly drove him back to drink. So the desire was there, right? It came at times. But he very quickly found that when he focused his mind on helping somebody else to get this miracle, God amazingly lifted him back up and he set him back on his feet. And that is my experience over and over and over and over again. Because this book tells me that when I'm agitated or doubtful, Doubtful of what? Doubtful of God's power? I have to ask God for the right thought or the right action. And the moment that I start speaking truth to somebody else about God's power and God's love and God's way of life, I'm helping them get set free by the truth. And it sets me free at the same time. So when Bill went into that hospital and he's telling these guys, listen, let me tell you about this miracle worker who did for me what I could not do for myself. At that moment that he's telling these alcoholics that message, he's reminded that maybe, just maybe, God can get him a job. Because at that time, he couldn't find work. But if God could get me sober, and I can tell you about how God can get you sober, then just maybe that same God can help me find a job. And just maybe that same God, in any moment that I'm in personally, can do for me what I simply cannot do for myself in any given moment of any given day, with any given situation. What if that's the truth? Thank you, God, because that is the truth. I'm so thankful. I don't have to figure any of this out. It's all here, play by play, line by line. I'm so grateful for this book. And one of the things that I do quite often is I study it so that I can have a new experience with it all the time. I need more. This ex-problem eater, drinker, thinker needs more. So the book uses words like a new basis, a new footing. It's like the whole foundation is different. Roots, grasp a new soil. It's like the whole foundation is different. And the foundation is steps 1, 2, and 3. 3 being the keystone. That when I take that position in my life, that when I really, really take that position, the book promises me that I'm going to have new power. I go from powerless to having new power. That's a beautiful promise. I need that power every single day. So step 1, I have a deceiver in my mind. I have a deceiver in my mind that lies to me with my own voice, and I believe it. And then I can't tell the true from the false. First, when it comes to food, first, when it comes to the first compulsive bite, the first compulsive blank, right? But once addiction is dealt with, I still have a deceiver. That's the unmanageability. That's what keeps me humble. That's what keeps me dependent. Bill learned later on, before he wrote Emotional Sobriety, he learned that he was using Alcoholics Anonymous to get his personal needs met, his brokenness, his unhealed brokenness. He was using the program to get those needs met. And it was continuously causing unmanageability. And he saw it most blatantly in his marriage. His wife was hurting because she was being neglected. So the more I do this work, I realize, you know what? If I'm not careful, I can use this program to feed my ego. I have all the answers, right? I hang up the phone. What about my husband? How do I treat my husband? Does my husband think I'm a completely changed woman? Does he see the fruit of all this work that I do? What about my children? What would they say? How are my personal relationships? Or do I just keep going to the phone because I feel good when I have the answers for everybody else? I'm still feeding that ego, that unmanageability, that self-will, that selfishness, that self-centeredness. I want to be free. I want the service that I do in this program, my purpose, the third word, purpose, to be an overflow. In the beginning, we sponsor because we need to. We need to not eat compulsively, and we need to focus. Again, that word focus. I need to focus my heart on the solution, on carrying the message. But eventually, as my consciousness of the presence of God increases, as my experience of steps 1, 2, and 3 increase, I sponsor from a place of overflow. Who do I want to be? Because there's always more. Thank you, God, that there's always more. So Bill recognized at some point that even helping people can be compulsive. That I can still be using this as an escape, right? Which takes me back to step 2, because restoring me to sanity, you know, having a deeper experience with step 2 is, for me, learning all the different words for that word sanity, right? The original meaning for that word sanity is absence of health, or ultimately, insanity is the absence of, but sanity is health. I'm asking to be restored to health. I'm believing that I can be restored to health. I'm seeing my depravity in step 1. I'm destroying myself with addiction. There is a spirit greater than me. There is a spirit at work in my life that wants to kill me, that wants to slit my throat and tell me it's my fault. But what I'm really dealing with is this selfishness and this self-centeredness, this unmanageability of my self-will, being out of alignment with God's will for my life. And so in step 2, coming to believe, a process, right? Like I come to believe, like in the beginning, like what am I willing to believe? This book says, what are you willing to believe? Let's work on the pride. Let's work on the prejudice. Let's work on that. But what are you willing to believe right now? Did you create yourself? No, I didn't create myself. Okay. Can we agree to having a creator? Yes. Okay, let's start there. It's where we start. It's where we start, right? It's a good place to start. But I come to believe that God can restore me, that I need a power greater than the power of self-will, the power of self, the power of addiction. I need a power greater than that power, capital P. Bill used the word deliverance. I need a power that can deliver me from the bondage of self. And one of the synonyms for the word sanity is balance. I need balance. Balance in my thinking. Well, you're just selfish. Go focus on somebody else. Get out of yourself. You're just being selfish. That's not balance. Yeah, ultimately. But I serve a very personal God who wants to help me. And that's where the rest of these steps come in, because I get to look at the defects of character that stand in my way. I get to look at the blocks in my life so that God can restore me to power. When I take people through the work, when I work someone through the fifth step, my primary focus there is to help them identify the position of power. There's the defect. There's the old way. There's the old thinking. So what's the power position? What would God have you be instead? And can I believe that as I live in 10, 11, and 12, I'm going to get the power to carry that out? But that it doesn't come from me. Self-help programs don't work for me. God has all the power. God has the ability to meet us exactly where we are today. The decision to turn towards the Father of Light in all things, this book says, that I must turn to the Father of Light in all things. Another bullseye sentence for me. All things. This program is beautiful. Don't give up wherever you are. Keep working these beautiful steps. They are divine. They have power. But ultimately, this program is about a person. It's about the presence of that person in our lives each and every day. And asking for that to be the most important fact, because it also teaches me that I'm a victim of a delusion. This is the step one, unmanageability, that I'm a victim of a delusion. What's the delusion that I'm a victim of? I'm a victim of a delusion that if I can just manage things a certain way, if I can just get what I want in this area of my life, I'll be happy. That's a delusion, because it's a moving target. Once I'm nailing it over here, I'm going to see another area of my life that isn't quite as I wish it to be. That's the human condition. That's why Bill says, hey, you know what? We have to do this because we're addicts, but by the way, this would benefit everybody, because the human condition is to find its ease and comfort somewhere, somehow, outside of me, apart from God. So in closing, I would say that the most important fact of my life today is that part of my purpose is having this affliction of addiction, this disease. Because the more I live, the more I realize everything in my life is about teaching me to be dependent upon God. And this addiction is the most powerful teacher. But every other issue in my life, there is something in it for me. Not in a self-centered way that it's all about me learning. Let me tell you about me again. No. Let me tell you about God's power again. Let me tell you what he did through this again. Let me tell you about his love. Let me tell you about how he's teaching me that while I see my character defects more than I ever have, I have more peace and more conviction about his love than I've ever had at the very same time. And let me tell you about his way of life. Because the more I live it, the more I give myself to it, the more I offer myself to it, and I set aside everything I think I know about everything I think I know, I get to experience this new power and this new peace. And guess what? It's available for you. That's the message of depth and weight that we need as alcoholics. And I am so grateful that for today, I am fully invested in this way of life. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Jennifer, for this beautiful presentation this morning. Inspiring, rich, and profound indeed. Thank you very, very much. The share ID for today, 23,172. That's 23172 for Jennifer's presentation. Certainly another gem for our archives. We thank you so much. Jennifer's contact information will be given at the conclusion of this recording, so do stay tuned for that. We will now transition to question and answer segment. You can pose a question to Jennifer by pressing star 1 to unmute, and please give me your name, including the first letter of your last name.
Dorita P.
Monica F.
Dorita. Monica.
Hanayeta R.
Gotcha.
Alexis F. Leah A.
Alexis F. Leah A. Star 1 to unmute if you'd like to get in this group.
Diana Y. from Philadelphia.
Diana Y.
Jody E.
And Jody. Okay, great. Let's get started with this group. We've got Dorita P. Susan P., is that it? I believe so. Okay, Dorita P., Monica S., Hanayeta R., Lexis F., Leah A., Diana Y., Jody E., and Susan P. So let's begin with Dorita P. Questions only, please. Thank you. Go right ahead, Dorita. Dorita, star 1 to unmute.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. That's so funny. I was just talking along. Sorry about that. Thank you, Leah, for your service. And thank you so much, Jennifer. So I'm going to preface my question with this. So in the movie, My Name is Bill W., probably the scariest part of the movie is before AA was born, and it was when he was packing for his trip to Akron, for his business trip to Akron, and how he was depressed. And Jennifer, you spoke of, you know, the waves of depression and, you know, self-pity. So I guess my question is, what do you do? I know you mentioned a whole lot of things, but I guess can you repeat what do you do when you are plagued with waves? I'm sure they don't probably come up to a couple few, two or three go-tos when you're not feeling. And then I just going to say this too. And you also talked about like helping people could be like part of the addiction. So what would be your two or three go-tos when you're not feeling, I'm going to say 100%. That's my question.
That's a great question. First of all, helping people is a great addiction. Let's be clear on that. It is good for the addict to know that they can get out of balance in any single way, especially anything that makes us feel good. Helping people makes us feel good. Right. So the propensity or the vulnerability to be out of balance, to be looking there for my self-worth is where Bill came to. And so it just I learned from Bill's experience. Right. So I recognize that can become a reality for me as well. So I have ways to guard against that. I have very distinct ways, checks and balances in my own life to make sure that that is in its place, that my family is the number one benefactor of my sobriety. In terms of being plagued by emotions and self-pity and things not going my way and, right? What do I do? Well, first of all, I recognize that I have a thinking problem. And ultimately, if I'm disturbed, if something's going on here in my heart, the 10-step process instructs me that I immediately ask God to remove it. Sometimes depression is a biochemical issue. Absolutely. I don't downplay the brain science aspect of some of the things that we deal with. But even then, I take full responsibility for the way that I'm thinking. That's leading to my problems. So the immediate action is I ask God to remove it. God, please remove blank. And I ask God to show me what he would have me think instead. Oftentimes, I am moved into a place of gratitude. And then I ask God to essentially help me apply the power position, which is always resolutely turning my thoughts to someone else. And the more I do that, by nature, wherever I'm at, takes care of itself. Because trust God, clean house, serve others. Trust God, clean house, serve others. I trust God that as I clean my house and serve others, God's got my back. I don't have to obsess. I don't have to find all the answers to my own problems. I don't have to dissect my childhood again. I don't have to figure out, all the things about me that are making me act the way I do. I've done that work, and I live in 10, 11, and 12. So that is the paradigm that sets us free. That's what I do.
Thank you, Dorita, for your question. Monica S., your turn.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much, Jennifer. I got a lot out of your well-thought-out share. My question is, and this is a real question, I'm not trying to be argumentative, but how is it prejudice to doubt that God is the male, M-A-L-E, male father, when in Bill's story it also states, why don't you choose your own conception of God? And so I guess my point is, isn't it kind of prejudice to declare as a fact for everyone that God is male, as opposed to say female or neither male nor female or male, female, and beyond? So that's my question.
I appreciate your question, and I understand that a lot of people have that same question. And here's what I do with that. Bill says a lot of things in this book to include everyone. So it started out with, here's the way, right? Here's the truth. This is the way to sobriety. This is the way to be saved. This is the way to know your creator. Get saved, get sober, in that order. And there were too many people that would have never gotten sober because they were unwilling to believe, because they had ideas that they weren't willing to set aside. So they would die in their addiction. And so the pressure was on for Bill to make this more palatable, to meet people exactly where they were, to give them a place to start. Conception is about beginning. To give people a place to start. And the hope that he had was that if you give them a place to start that they can buy into, over time, they will come to know the God of creation. And that was Bill's hope. It was never about, you know, you pick your God and you pick your God. Because here's the thing, all throughout the book, we see that's not what he's saying. We can take things out of context. We could hold on to, everybody has their bullseye sentences, right? Everybody has their bullseye paragraphs that they're going to cling to and hold on to. And it's really just a matter of, what do you want yours to be? And so any fixed idea that I have is a prejudice. It's a block in my mind. It's something I'm holding on to that could be keeping me from experiencing more power, more freedom. And I just don't want anything to keep me from that. So, you know, who you work with through this process is important in terms of what you're hoping to experience for yourself. You know, they say Mickey Mouse can take you through this work. Absolutely. And you also might start thinking like Mickey Mouse, and you might also start talking like Mickey Mouse at the same time, because we learn who we learn from, right? So these steps are powerful no matter what. You can say they came from anywhere. You can say they came from the air, you know, if you want to. They're still going to work in your life because they are powerful. The principles are powerful principles, and they work. So each person decides for themselves where they're going to start, and also what they're willing to set aside to have a new experience. And that is a personal decision. And I do believe that when Bill used the word to choose your own conception, it was definitely about inviting everybody in. And that's all I've got for that.
Thank you, Monica, for your question. Hanayeta R., your turn.
Excuse me, this is Hanayeta R. from Texas. First of all, Jennifer, what a amazing God-filled talk. Your voice is amazing. I loved listening to you. I have a question that kind of is not really on this, but I think I would love to hear your answer. You had a sponsee that is still struggling with food and higher power, and she's gone through the steps. But you didn't start sponsoring her until step 8 and 9, and she said she had already done the other steps and she didn't really want to go back. Would you want to take her to step 1? Not her abstinence, but just do the steps again if she's still struggling so bad with a lot of the concepts. She hasn't had a spiritual awakening. She's just really out there. I'd like your opinion on that.
Thank you for that question. Thank you for those encouraging words. I so appreciate that. So my experience is that what I have done, to the point where people who have known me in this program definitely asked me, like, are you done? Because I kept going through the steps. And I would, anything that had to do with the food, anything that had to do with the food, even if I started thinking that I didn't have to weigh a measure anymore, like so-and-so doesn't weigh a measure, I don't think I have to weigh a measure. Like I can do this without weighing and measuring.
I would do a quick run through the steps. Because the thing about it is, entire abstinence is where this whole thing begins. And I need to be reminded over and over and over again that this thing wants to slit my throat. And the doctor's opinion is so crystal clear. Entire abstinence, this disease has to be arrested in handcuffs, lock and key, period, arrested, both handcuffs. The monster wants to slit my throat. The only way I'm safe is the monster is in handcuffs, behind bars, arrested. So I have a delusion in my head that will crop up every once in a while, especially the more time I have, that maybe, just maybe, I don't need to do that anymore. Or maybe, just maybe, I can go back to a food that used to be a problem but isn't going to be a problem this time, right? Like, I'm never above that, if I believe what this book is teaching me. And here's the thing, like, we're not dealing with alcohol, we're dealing with food. So there's some subtleties there that are not going to be there with other addictions that we have to just address. So because of my experience, anytime I'm working with somebody, when the food becomes an issue in any way, shape, or form again, I'm like, let's go back. Doesn't have to take forever. It doesn't have to take the same amount of time, but I am doing them a disservice if I think that we can just clean it up and keep on moving. Because, and yes, that is a way of doing it, just clean it up and keep on moving. The problem with that is that I've seen so many people do that. 5 years ago, I would have said, yeah, clean it up, keep on moving. But guess what? I've seen it not work too many times that I believe I am better off spending the time to take a look again at step one, step two, step three. Because here's the thing, step two is not so much about, okay, fine, I got it. Yeah, it's a power greater than me. I need a power greater than me. I'm powerless. I know I can't do this. I get it. Check. Step two is also about, how awake am I to my need to be helped? How awake am I to the bondage of self? So as that awakening increases and I do the work again, I get a new experience with the work, with all of the work. So I think as a sponsor, it's my job to share my experience, and my experience is that I need to be clean, and the clean happens in 1, 2, 3. So if I think I'm on 8, but I'm still playing with food, then that's not the actual step I'm on. There's two different ways of looking at the steps. What step are you on? Well, I know what step work I'm doing. I'm doing step work for 8. How do I know what step I'm actually on? God knows. My behavior shows. And that's the truth. The truth is, what step are they really on? And it's my job as a sponsor to turn to the Father of Light in all things, including my sponsorship. He's got the answers. And I ask him to shine his light on what this person needs. So that's my answer.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Anietta. Next question comes from Alexis S.
Yes, thank you, Leigh and Jennifer. Jennifer, I have two questions for you. Number one is that how many levels of consciousness are there? You said you attained the highest level of consciousness or something to that effect. How many levels are there, and how do you attain the highest level? That's question number one. Question number two is, the book says that you don't pray for yourself, you pray for others. how do you work step six, making a list of our shortcomings? Step seven, humbly ask them to remove our shortcomings. And step 10 and 11, where you list your fears, resentments, dishonesty, and selfishness. And not pray for yourself.
Thank you for that question, so I could clarify a very important fact, which is that I have no idea how many levels of consciousness they are, and I certainly have yet to arrive at the top. I'm somewhere down here on the level of consciousness where I am in need of healing every step of the way. I need power. I need healing. I need to see what I can't see. And I need God to show me and heal me and continue to forgive me for the shortcomings that show up every day. I need to ask God constantly. This will answer both of your questions because the book is clear on how to pray. Many, many times in the book, ask God. Page 86, ask God. Page 67, ask God to save me from being angry. Ask God. Ask God to help me show others patience. Ask God how I can help the person that I'm annoyed with. Ask God how I can help them. Ask God, especially 87, for freedom from self-will. Step one again, right? The unmanageability, the self-will. Ask God. Ask God all through the day. Show me what's next. I'm asking first thing in the morning, God, show me all throughout the day. I'm like putting like a blanket statement on the whole day. I'm asking like for a blanket prayer, which these are not selfish prayers because essentially, as I'm asking God to be shown all through the day his will, as I carry the vision of God's will into every single day, which is what I'm instructed to do, as I'm asking for these things, am I going to benefit from them? Absolutely. But the bullseye is always for the purpose of overflow. So whatever it is that I'm asking for myself, even my own healing, whatever it is, like when I'm healed, when I'm in a place of greater health, whether it's physical, spiritual, emotional, I am in a much better position to be of service. So the end game is always thy power, thy love, thy way of life. But I'm constantly asking, and in no way do I ever arrive on this side of heaven to this greatest level of consciousness. But each day that I operate as a child of God and I understand that I have a deceiver in my mind and I understand that I'm going to get out of alignment and I use 10, 11, 12 to get me back into an alignment with God, with his will, then I am practicing the sentence that my most important fact is staying very conscious and very clear on the presence of God in my life today. That's the only place that I'm ultimately trying to live. And I don't know about any other state of consciousness, but I know that's the one that I want to stay connected with.
Thank you, Alexis F., for your question. Next up, Leah A., your turn.
Yes, hi, my name is Leah A. from Montreal, Canada. Thank you so much for your share, Jennifer. That was amazing. My question is, I feel stuck in a so-called delusion here. And even when I do the work and living in 10, 11, and 12, you know, it's like I am not even sure if this is a delusion or it's God's will. So that's my question on how to work around that. And yeah, and I guess the other question is about your daily practice for daily conscious with God. You actually covered that in the previous question as well, and how, you know, you identify the sudden lies that you talked about. Thank you.
Thank you. What was the question? I'm so sorry. I need to be reminded of the actual question. Yes. That I'm answering.
The question is, I feel stuck in a delusion, okay?
Oh.
Even when
uh-huh.
I'm doing the work, and what is your advice here? And I'm not even sure if it's a delusion or if it's God's will.
Yeah, so self-deception runs deep with this disease and with the human condition, right? Like, the lies sound true. I deceive myself, right? So, like, if I deceive myself, if I think things that are not true, but then I believe that they're true, then how do I know that they're not true, right? Like, this is what the book is telling me that I do. Like, I have self-deception. So clearly, like, I can't manage that on my own. Now, in terms of getting out of that, getting out of whatever that deception is, the realignment process, 10, 11, and 12, I mean, essentially, how do I know I'm deceiving myself? How do I know that what I'm thinking is right? You know, this is where I'm so grateful that I don't do this alone, right? Because the thing is, if this worked with me and God in the corner, I wouldn't be here. I would just be pray, 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 ask, ask, ask. Got it. I'm good. I got all the health knowledge I need, y'all. I know how to eat. Now me and God, we got this. I tried to do that. It didn't work. God wanted me in this program. I needed to need this program. So, like, a helpful process is that I invite others into my thinking. Two-way prayer is a really powerful tool. It was highly, highly, heavily used in the Oxford group. It was just a really, really important process of prayer and meditation. And yet, even then, they suggested sharing it with at least one other person. Because ultimately, there is a possibility that I could hear something or think something that I think God's telling me. And it's not until I hold it under the light, which comes from exposure, that I'm able to recognize, oh, you know what? Maybe that actually isn't the best thing. You know what I mean? Like, maybe that's actually not what God is telling me to do. And maybe here's why. So I don't do any of this by myself, but I am growing in understanding and effectiveness the book is teaching me. So I do have the ability at times to be able to discern. In my world, it's sort of the discerning of God's voice versus not God's voice, right? And like, God's voice, what it sounds like, is usually gentle, corrective, absolutely, pointing out, hey, you know what? That wasn't right. That wasn't right. Say you're sorry. Okay, I hear that. That's God, right? But where it can take me, which is what the book is teaching me, into morbid reflection, where I then begin to obsess about something, that's not God. So part of it is understanding the book, the process, the steps. The other part of it is knowing when to pick up the phone and say, hey, what do you think about this? And that's
that's what I would say is the answer, is it's all of the above, and it's growing in the understanding of when do I need to invite somebody else into this. And the ability to pause gets greater, I think, the more we do this work. Where I used to think I get direction and then I used to act on it and go based on my feelings, I pause a little longer now. I sleep on it, and I give God an opportunity to confirm what I think, so that I don't make bad decisions. And the book teaches me that the more I do that, I'm in much less danger of messing things up and wasting time. So that's my answer to that. Thanks for asking.
And thank you, Leah, for that question. To all who post questions, that's our time for this morning. Of course, we're going to get Jennifer's contact information for those who did not yet get to pose their question. I want to thank you, Jennifer, for your beautiful presentation this morning. Thank you for all your time that you gave to us. Such a rich and profound presentation it was. Quite a gem. Thank you. Again, today's share ID, 23,172. That's 23172. And we're going to close now from page 164 from a chapter entitled A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past, freely of what you find, and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely join, you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.